hope so. Then she will not have to be the one to tell them. When the ship passed around Cape Horn, many lights were visible from the shore, but Cape Horn is much farther south than Rolinth. Mirabella stares at the dark wood walls of her cabin. She has not been much use on this journey, letting other elementals guide the ship. She has lacked the will since Arsinoe's death. They do not need her anyway, with so many able to control the winds, and Sarah is strong enough with water to handle the currents by herself. Someone knocks. Yes? The door opens and Billy pokes his head inside. She has not seen much of him since leaving port. The one time she approached his quarters, she heard him weeping through the door and turned away.
Care for some company?
Please. She gestures for him to come inside and sit.
My room is too quiet, he says. I miss Harriet and her clucking.
Mirabella sets aside the book she had been paging through. She ought to sit properly, swing her legs off her bed and move their visit to a table. It is improper for her to recline with Billy seated beside her feet. But what does she care? They are not strangers, and she does not have the energy to worry about impropriety anyhow. Harriet will be well? With Joseph's family? She asks.
She'd better be. If I return to find her in a stew pot.
Billy trails off. His cheeks are gray, ashen. He has not looked at her since coming inside, only past her. He meant to use her as a distraction from his grief, and she is failing him. It is not much longer until we reach Rolinth, Mirabella says, lifting her voice.
I know. You're all cheaters, you elementals, calling the winds and pushing the waves. This barely qualifies as sailing.
He smiles, but it looks wrong without touching his eyes. At least you saw her again, Mirabella says gently. At least you had time with her. I hope that your last moments were good ones.
I should have told her. I never told her.
I am sure that she knew.
How could she? All I did was tell her that she was unfit, unsuitable, infuriating, with none of the makings a man looks for in a wife.
He laughs hollowly.
And that was true. But I would have overlooked all that.
Mirabella exhales. She meant to chuckle. Billy reaches onto the side table and picks up a couple bits of jewelry that Bree left lying there.
This is such a strange stateroom. Things left out? Nothing nailed down?
No need for that on an elemental ship. He curls the black and silver bracelet in his fingers and drops his hand into his lap.
What will you do now? He asks. Will you forget her too?
Mirabella turns to her wall, as though she can see through it to the tossing ocean outside. As she always does, she feels the elements all around her, the lightning she could crackle through the clear sky, the wind that would scream for her, the soft hum of the flame atop her candle. She could reach out with her gift and use the sea like her fist, topple the ship and press it with waves until it cracked. All the elementals on board could not stop her. But Billy is there, whom Arsinoe loved. And somewhere is Jules, who is still being hunted. And Cat. She must not forget about Cat.
Still so much work to be done.
I will not forget her. If you stay and help me to remember, Mirabella says. If you stay and help me to avenge her.
Stay, he says.
Yes, and rule with me for her. They regard each other in the quiet, dim light. He seems as surprised to hear it as she is surprised to ask. Since she was a child, Luca tried to convince her that she was an important queen. It was a lesson she neither believed nor wanted, but she believes it now.
You would choose me as your king, he says.
King consort, she corrects him.
But yes. Is that what she would want?
I do not know. But we must marry someone. And the ones we would have, we cannot have. Billy stares at her hard. So we are a good match. Then he shakes his head. I can't do this. So soon after, it feels wrong. You want to avenge her, do you not? Or would you give up now and go back to the mainland? Will you go and pay court to Katarine, her murderer? No, Billy barks, and his expression turns dark. Never. Then stay, and be a part of it. Mirabella holds out her hand. She needs him to say yes. She suddenly cannot bear the thought of him leaving. He, the only suitor who loved her sister, he must be king. I wanted her to have everything, he says, staring at her hand. I wanted to have everything with her. Mirabella waits. She lets him wipe his eyes and take his deep breaths. Billy Chatworth has a good heart. He is smart and strong and loyal. Will we seal this bargain with a handshake, then? He asks. Is that how it is done on the mainland? Only between men of honor, he says, and slides his hand into hers. It is not the first time they have touched, but this touch is charged with the knowledge that one day they will exchange much more than a handshake. Billy's fingers slip out of hers, and he looks away guilty. But Arsinoe and Joseph are not there to judge. So what now? He asks. Now we take the fight to Katarine. The ship reaches port in Roland not long after, and Bree and Elizabeth come to take Mirabella above. They are surprised to find Billy already there, fastening her light summer cape about her shoulders. You're wearing all black, Elizabeth says to him.
Black is the color of mourning where I come from.
Well, here it is the color of queens, Bree says. She unties the gauzy crimson scarf at her throat and reties it onto his. There, for your Arsinoe. He touches it and looks at Mirabella.
Or should I be in all black? For you, he asks.
But she shakes her head. No, Mirabella says. This is fitting. Bree and Elizabeth exchange a glance. Not even they know about the betrothal agreement. Word would spread too fast, and Mirabella did not want Luca's questions or Sarah's worries. Mirabella and Billy step up onto the deck together to face the massive crowd gathered at the Roland docks. All around the port, candles burn in the proud white buildings, and the people are dressed in black and crimson to mourn a queen. Their eyes are somber and chins high. The only sound is the cawing of seabirds fighting over fish scraps. Sarah and Luca stand on the deck already, but Mirabella walks quickly past them, tugging Billy behind her before either has a chance to speak. This is her crowd, her moment. She opens her mouth with every eye upon her. No doubt you have heard what happened in Wolf Spring, she says loudly. The death of my sister, the naturalist Queen Arsinoe, at the hands of the poisoner Queen Katarine. She pauses to let the grumbling build, the disdainful whispers about the poisoners. Now she thinks to come to Roland for the festival of the Reaping Moon, to have her triumph before all of you. The people start to shout, and she lets them, talking louder over the tops of their furrowed brows and shaking fists. She thinks to parade into our city, my city, and kill me as if it is sport. But she will not. Mirabella feels the whisper of robes at her shoulder, and Luca's calm voice cuts through the noise. Mira, she says, what are you up to? Mirabella reaches back and takes Billy by the hand. Today I choose my king consort. And he chooses me, uniting Wolfspring and Roland under one crown. And today,
I challenge Queen Catarine to a duel, she shouts. A duel in Indrid Down. I would have you join me there, and we will put an end to this poisoner at last.
Her people cheer. She raises Billy's hand in hers, and the people cheer louder.
This is what they have wanted, to see their chosen queen rise up and seize her throne.
Mirabella, Lucas says, this is not wise.
Perhaps not, but it is done, says Mirabella. Catarine thinks she will celebrate the Reaping Moon here, but by the time the Reaping Moon comes, she will already be dead.
Wolf Spring. Joseph wrings his rag out in his soap bucket and wrinkles his nose. Someone has thrown eggs against the windows of Gillespie's bookshop, a whole clutch of them, it seems, and in the midday heat, the sticky, running yolks have already started to smell. Joseph starts at the top and wipes down, the cloth and water not doing much, but smearing the whole mess together. He should have brought a brush and more buckets.
Such a waste of good eggs!
Joseph looks up and sees Madge, hawker of the best fried clams in the market, reflected in the window, a basket covered in blue cloth hooked over her arm. He nods to her, and her wizened eyes squint in disgust.
If they had any brains in their head, she says, they'd have used rotten eggs. Then the smell'd be bad enough to have you throwing up on your own shoes.
Do you know who it was?
Could have been anybody.
Joseph dunks his rag again and goes back to cleaning.
It could have been anybody.
Barely a week has passed since Jules disappeared with Arsinoe's body, since the town learned about her legion curse. But how quickly they have turned on her. Her and everyone who loves her.
He might not have even heard the eggs, Madge says,
her eyes on the black cloth Luke hung up inside to cover the windows. Black and crimson, for his queen.
It's not like he's peeked out here, or left that house since it happened. He hasn't even left his bed except to piss.
How would you know? Joseph asks,
and Madge flips back the cloth over her basket to reveal fried oysters and fresh baked bread. A little bottle of ale.
Not up except to piss, I said. So who do you think's been feeding him?
Joseph smiles at the basket. Good old Madge.
Maybe you shouldn't, he says. They'll see. My family's had boats pulled out of slips at night, people too cowardly to revoke business face to face. They might stop coming to your stand.
Let them. Who needs them?
She pauses and sneers over her shoulder at anyone who might be watching.
The cursed deserve compassion, understanding, not to be pecked to death like a chicken with a dark spot.
She points a finger at the smearing of eggs, and not the sentence the council's going to give her when she returns. Joseph scrapes eggshell from the window and says nothing. After a moment, Madge squeezes his shoulder and steps past him into the shop, quieting the cheerful brass bell with one hand. It takes him nearly 2 hours to scrub the mess from the windows. When he is finished, his rag is ruined, mostly slime, and the water in his bucket is foul-smelling sludge. No matter how many times he rinses it, Gillespie's will still smell slightly on very hot days. But it is better. Joseph is stretching the knots out of his back and shoulders when a pretty black crow lands beside his bucket and peers inside.
Aria,
he says, and she caws. He looks around for Madrigal and finds her walking calmly toward him from the square. Her white shirt sleeves are rolled against the heat, and her black skirt is tied with a crimson sash.
Still no word from Jules?
He asks, even though he knows the answer.
Nothing.
I thought she would be back by now.
Madrigal shrugs. Digging a grave or building a pyre takes time, she says.
Our Jules is all right.
She'll come back when it's done.
And what if it isn't done? What if Arsinoe is alive?
The Arryns took Braddock.
Arsinoe never would have let them if she were alive. And they found her blood, right where Queen Catarine said they would.
I didn't say she wasn't shot, Joseph says,
trying to explain without having to tell Madrigal the truth about Arsinoe's poisoner gift.
I just don't know where Jules would go, if she needed someplace safe.
There's nowhere Jules feels safe, says Madrigal.
Not since the Ascension started. Or maybe ever. She's always been watchful, ready.
That was the war gift, even then.
Madrigal takes a breath, and her face falls.
Only some ones have ever made Jules feel safe.
You used to, Joseph. And my sister, Kara.
Kara, Joseph whispers, and Madrigal's eyes brighten as she realizes what he means.
The Black Cottage. But that's so far.
You know our Jules. She would have tried.
Flustered, Joseph picks up his bucket and sloshes filth across his shoes. He feels like a fool for not thinking of the cottage before. He wants to run for it immediately, so sure that he will find her there.
We have to be careful, Madrigal says. The council has spies here now. They will be watching. We have to wait for cover of dark.
Greavesdrake Manor. The Arryns hold a grand party at Greavesdrake Manor in honor of Catarine's victory. Small celebrations along the road from Wolfspring were not enough, nor was the parade back into the capital, with Catarine riding point before the revived and roaring bear.
The beast was such a spectacle, Renata Hargrove comments to several gathered guests, thrashing against the ropes and swinging its head back and forth, even though it had just been poisoned and badly bled.
Where is it now?
Caged in the courtyard of the Volroy. I can barely look at it without shivering.
Wait until I parade it into Rowlandth for the Reaping Moon, Catarine says.
She reaches for a flute of champagne and does not bother to sniff for toxin before draining nearly half.
Poor Mirabella will probably faint.
Nicholas slips his hand around Catarine's waist and pulls her onto the dance floor. He holds her very close and whispers things that make her heart pound. And Peter watches from their table, clenching his jaw so hard his face looks like it is about to shatter.
Why do you look at him? Nicholas asks.
At who?
At Peter Reynard. There has been something between the two of you. I can see it in the way he watches us.
If there was before, it is over now.
But even as she says so, Catarine's eyes flicker toward Peter. Nicholas is handsome. He is bold. And he wants her. But he has not replaced Peter. And she fears bitterly that he never will.
Send him away, Nicholas whispers.
No.
Send him away, he says again. Soon I will be in your bed, and I don't want to look over my shoulder and find him standing there.
Catarine pulls back. She gazes at him coolly. It was a request, but it sounded like an order.
Peter will stay as long as he likes, she says. He is an Arryn. He is family.
Nicholas shrugs, and his voice returns to its normal softness.
As you wish.
But will he take part in the hunt of the stags?
He may.
And will he try to poison me there? Cut me with a poisoned blade?
Will you try to put your knife in his back?
Catarine counters, but Nicholas only laughs.
Of course not, my sweet, he says. When I kill a man, I look into his eyes.
Catarine forces a smile. Of course he is joking. He must be. No one must ever be allowed to harm Peter.
No one but her.
Something across the room catches Nicholas's attention, and he steps away.
One moment, Queen Catarine.
I have a gift for you, and it has just arrived.
He excuses himself and cuts through the guests toward the main doors, where Natalia's butler Edmund is waiting. Peter approaches her from behind.
He leaves you in the middle of a song?
He says he has a gift for me.
He turns her into his arms and they begin to dance.
It is easier and more natural feeling than with Nicholas. She and Peter are matched. When she looks into his eyes, she sees herself, her better self, reflected back at her.
Whatever gift it is, it will not be worthy of you.
He does not know how to treat a poisoner queen.
Nicholas returns with Edmund following and carrying a silver tray. A vase at its center holds a small bundle of greens capped with tiny white blossoms, and along the outside edge, several cups stand filled with a white liquid. Nicholas leads them off the dance floor to Natalia's table, where Natalia sits talking with Genevieve, their brother Antonin, cousin Lucian, and other members of the Black Council.
If you will permit me, he says, and they look up. I have brought a gift in honor of Queen Catherine's victory.
He sets a glass before every poisoner at the table, even shoving a cup into Peter's hand, before serving Natalia and Catherine last.
I hope you don't mind my use of your staff, but I wanted it to be a surprise.
Natalia looks at the plants in the vase.
White snake root, she says.
I don't believe you have it here, says Nicholas.
We do not.
She adjusts her heavy black mamba as its drugged head slides down her arm.
But I know it well. Grazing on as little as a small bundle can toxify an entire mother cow, rendering the meat and the milk completely poisonous.
Serving a poison known to cause milk sickness in a glass of milk, Peter says, and sniffs his glass.
You are quite a student, Nicholas. Soon you will be an expert in it.
Reynard, Nicholas replies. What talent you have for making a compliment sound like a threat.
Catherine glances between them, and Natalia lifts her milk, knowing, as usual, when to diffuse a situation.
A truly exotic poison, she says.
A fine gift. We will savor it, slowly.
Her eyes find Catherine's.
Slowly and in a minute amount. Catherine has been exposed to white snake root only 2 or 3 times.
Catherine raises her glass and drains it. She wipes her lips with the back of her hand and listens to the gasps.
Natalia's eyes tremble above the rim of her cup, but she sips.
You will be drunk on that, Queen Catherine, she says.
It is too potent.
You should retire now to your rooms.
But Catherine is not brought to her rooms. She is brought into Natalia's study. By the time she reaches it, the poison is already breaking into her body. She barely has time to remove Sweetheart from her wrist and hand her off to Peter before she falls to the rug. The convulsions are violent, painful. Her teeth clench and she bites her tongue. The blood tastes of the poisoned milk.
She listens to the fear in Natalia's and Peter's voices as they scurry to invoke the other side of their gift, the healer's side, combing their memories over old lessons, remedies, antidotes.
Bottles rattle on Natalia's shelves as she fingers through them. Drawers squeak open and slam shut.
Put your hand down her throat, Natalia orders. Make her void her stomach.
Peter kneels at her head.
He tries.
I cannot get past her teeth.
Catherine?
Natalia looms over her. Her only mother, and her face is full of fear.
Cat, throw it up now!
The convulsions ease, and she relaxes, though the pain remains. It feels as though someone has reached through her ribs to squeeze her heart.
Peter gathers her into his lap. He kisses her forehead and pushes damp black hair from her cheeks.
Catherine, please, he whispers.
You will kill yourself if you keep on this way.
Katerine's head swivels loosely on her neck. When she speaks, her voice is rasping and strange, hardly her own.
Do not be ridiculous, boy. You cannot kill what is already dead.
The Black Cottage. When Arsinoe wakes, her first sight is Jules and Camden sharing a chair. She smiles weakly and blinks against the brightness, every muscle in her body groaning and stiff. But she is warm and alive, and the bed she is in would be comfortable were it not for the throbbing, sewn-up hole in her back. She has no idea where they are, but there is something very familiar about this room.
Jules? Arsinoe!
Jules and Camden jump up from the chair. Camden leaps onto her feet, purring, her tail winging back and forth.
Water?
Arsinoe croaks and swallows for what feels like forever after Jules pours her a cup. Her mouth tastes terrible, like old blood.
Ankara? Jules shouts. Willa! She's awake!
Willa?
Arsinoe rubs her eyes. She knows where they are now. The Black Cottage, where she was born. Kara walks into the room with Juniper, her dark brown hound, and immediately comes to kiss Arsinoe on the cheek. Arsinoe can only stare. Then old Willa pushes Kara out of the way to press the back of her hand against Arsinoe's forehead.
No fever, Willa says. Your luck is holding.
She has more luck than anyone I've ever heard of, Jules says. How many times have you almost died? 3? 4?
Try 10 or 11?
Arsinoe pushes up off her pillow. Kara and Jules inhale, but Willa quickly stuffs another behind her back.
Let her sit up, she says gruffly. It is good for her lungs, and her poisoner gift will let her heal faster than you would.
Poisoner gift? Arsinoe says.
My secret's less of a secret.
She already knew, says Jules. Arsinoe reaches out and strokes Juniper's brown head. Looking into the dog's sweet, dark eyes, she almost wants to cry. She has missed them so much.
You must be surprised to be here, says Kara.
I'm surprised to be anywhere.
She pauses as she remembers the Queen's hunt, the vicious look on Katerine's face.
Braddock?
Jules shakes her head. I don't know, Arsinoe. We had to run so fast. She says no more, but Arsinoe knows that the poisoners would not have left the bear alive. They could not have, as angry as he was. Poor Braddock. She had been a fool to think she could protect him.
Billy,
she says suddenly.
He must think I'm dead. Everyone must.
Everyone does, says Jules. Or at least no one has come looking.
I am going out for more yarrow.
Willa trudges around the bed and heads for the door.
And now that she is awake, there are vegetables that need picking. I have not forgotten what it took to feed her when she was a child. I can only imagine what she will eat now. Come, Kara.
Kara nods, but before she goes, she touches Arsinoe's scarred cheek. I'm sorry you took an arrow to the back, she says, but I'm still glad to see you. She smiles, closed-lipped and almost grim, as she rolls up her sleeves. Nothing about Kara is free and easy like her sister, Madrigal, but there is more in a single gesture than a dozen of Madrigal's embraces.
The way she looks at me, Arsinoe says when she and Jules are alone, it's like she doesn't see any scars at all.
She hasn't changed, Jules says.
Not in that way, anyhow.
In what way, then? Jules leans her head back. It's just strange to see her here, so calm, like she's at home. I know she is at home, but... I know what you mean, says Arsinoe. I want her home again, too.
Jules grasps the tip of Camden's tail and rubs the fur until Camden swats at her.
Tell me what happened. I only remember being shot in the back, and then you pulling me into the saddle.
I used the war gift, Jules replies. I pushed Katarine right through the air. She must have rolled 3 times.
Wish I could have seen that.
I don't know how I did it. The curse is bound. The war gift isn't that strong. I just did it because I had to.
Could you do it again? Arsinoe asks.
Not for all the cakes in Luke's oven.
Arsinoe almost asks how Jules feels, if the curse is taking its toll on her mind. But she does not.
Jules is fine, safe. The question would only add to her worry.
Jules? Arsinoe squints one eye. When I was drifting in and out, did I confess to you that I used low magic on you and Joseph?
You did?
Did I tell you how sorry I am? How I didn't know what my low magic could do?
You did. And it doesn't matter. We'll never really know whether it was your magic or Mirabella's beauty or Joseph being half dead and easily aroused.
Arsinoe chuckles. Besides, I've forgiven him.
Truly?
Truly, Jules says and nods. Camden's ears prick.
What is it? Arsinoe asks.
They listen. Hoofbeats from the direction of the mountains.
Jules springs for the window.
If it is riders from the Black Council, there is no time to run.
Arsinoe throws back her quilt and winces as she dangles her leg over the side of the bed.
Jules turns and frowns. Arsinoe, you dolt! Stay in bed!
Dolt? What a thing to say when I've almost died!
But Jules is no longer listening. Her eyes widen, her knuckles white as she grips onto the curtains.
Stay there, she says, and bolts for the door. It's Joseph!
Joseph? Camden, stay and help me!
But the cat scrambles off the bed and dashes after Jules, as excited to see him as she is.
Stupid, lovesick cat, Arsinoe grumbles.
She uses the bedside table to brace and reaches for the arm of the chair. Somehow she manages to get to the window and holds fast to the sash.
Just past the cottage steps, Jules and Joseph have their arms wrapped around each other.
His reins are still looped over his elbow, so Jules probably dragged him bodily off his horse.
Madrigal is there, too, sitting very upright, staring directly at Kara.
Arsinoe turns and limps out of the room, sliding against the wall as she goes down the hallway. When she gets to the door, Joseph is so buried in Jules that at first he does not even see her. But when he does, he shouts,
Arsinoe!
Arsinoe! Madrigal's mouth hangs open, and Arsinoe nods to her before Joseph gently scoops her into his arms, squeezing a bit too tightly.
Careful, she says. I really was shot by a crossbow.
He kisses her cheek and turns to Jules.
You did it, Jules. You saved her.
Yes, she is alive.
Willa steps up onto the porch, carrying 2 plucked chickens.
And so popular. You are all welcome at our table tonight. But tomorrow, you go. Contrary to its size, the Black Cottage was not intended to house guests.
Greavesdrake Manor. Genevieve lies stretched across the silk brocade chaise in Natalia's study, eating figs glazed in sugar and cantarella. Ever since midsummer, it is as though she is on a great holiday, humming and buying lavish gowns and dresses from her favorite shops in the capital. She is acting as if killing Arsinoe has won them the crown, and it is beginning to get on Natalia's nerves.
Why are you not at the Volroy, sister? Natalia asks.
I am not needed today, Genevieve replies. They are discussing a request from Roland for funds to restore the vaulted theater. You should be there to advise. They already know what I would advise. Our eyes in Roland say they are overextended in renovating the central district. They will bankrupt themselves and ask the crown to bail them out. She eats another fig and licks poison from her fingers. Only Lucci and Marlowe will argue their side, saying that the crown's coffers are for all queens, not just ours. Can you imagine?
Natalia stares past Genevieve through the windows that overlook the drive. Catherine is somewhere out there, riding the bridal paths with her suitor and Peter. She alone deserves a moment to celebrate, not the council. They must keep working in preparation for the journey to Roland at the Reaping Moon.
If I were to die, Natalia says suddenly, you would be the head of the family.
Genevieve puts down her figs.
Sister, are you unwell?
I am fine. Natalia walks to the window, hoping to catch a glimpse of Catherine on horseback. She has gifted her a flashy new stallion, all black, with long, lean legs and a smooth stride. He will not replace Half Moon, but she hopes that they will get along.
Then what are you thinking of?
Genevieve rises to a seated position and sets her sticky plate to one side.
I suppose I am thinking of our mother, Natalia replies,
and what she would say if she were alive to see us now.
Mother, Genevieve says and shudders.
Yes, Mother was terrifying. She held the council and Queen Camille in a clenched fist. When she controlled the Arryns, the whole island feared them. The only thing the Arryns had to fear was her. Natalia, though she has tried, has never been her mother's match, and Genevieve is even less so. Genevieve inherited all their mother's cruelty, but none of her initiative, and so she is cutthroat but unreliable. She never knows where to strike.
And what would Mother say? Genevieve wonders aloud.
Natalia crosses her arms.
She would certainly say that we are horrible breeders. No children for me, and none for you. Only a boy for Christoph.
But Antonin has two girls, and we'll have more. Genevieve says nothing of children for herself. She has never shown much romantic inclination, and of the lovers she has had, those that lasted the longest were women. As for Natalia, the goddess had sent her Catherine, and she is more than enough. She smiles, watching Catherine and Peter ride side by side out of the trees. The new stallion rises up on his hind legs when Catherine tries to slow him. She looks so delicate on his massive back, but soon she has him prancing docilely in a circle. Natalia sighs.
Enough of this. Has there been any word of the Malone girl? Any word of Arsinoe's body?
None, and no one expects any. The naturalist knows her woods. If she hides the corpse away or buries it, no one will find it except for the bugs.
Genevieve raises an eyebrow.
It is the Malone girl who is the real problem. So strong and legion-cursed? And with the war gift of all things, something must be done.
Something will be done, Natalia says. But not yet. The Legion curse is an abomination.
It is my guess that the temple will take care of her for us, which will give us a chance to keep our hands clean with Wolf Spring.
Natalia presses her forefingers to the bridge of her nose. You will not be able to do this for much longer, sister, Genevieve says.
Do what?
Hide away in your hilltop manor?
Soon Catherine will be living in the East Tower with her king consort, and you will have no more excuses to avoid your council seat.
Do not remind me.
Natalia narrows her eyes at a rider approaching up the long, tree-lined drive.
A messenger, riding fast.
Catherine intercepts the letter and tears it open.
Natalia tenses.
She rushes from the room when Catherine begins to scream.
Catherine pats her new stallion's neck. Together, they led Peter and Nicholas on a merry chase through the woods, and the stallion does not want it to end. But she keeps her hands firm on the reins until he quiets.
"Shall we go in for tea?" she asks the boys.
"And later to the city, to buy sardines to feed my poor sister's bear."
"I do not like you so near that thing," Peter says, and she rolls her eyes.
During the parade back to the city, Peter flinched every time it fought against its ropes.
"It is not happy with you, Cat, for what you did to its mistress."
"Truly, Peter, I thought the same at first. But I have fed the bear many times since, and whatever anger it had is gone. It is as if it does not care at all."
"Perhaps it's no longer a familiar, now that she is dead," Nicholas adds. "In any case, I enjoy seeing it, Queen Catherine. And perhaps hunting it at this year's Beltane Festival."
She smiles, a little nervously. "Perhaps." Hoofbeats make them pause. They stop their mounts and wait for the messenger to canter up the drive.
"Good afternoon, Queen Catherine," the girl says, breathless from her ride.
She bows as deep as she can in the saddle.
"I have a message for Mistress Erin."
"I will take it." Catherine holds out a gloved hand, and the messenger gives it over. She salutes them before riding away. Catherine breaks the Black Council's wax seal and opens the letter. Another letter is folded inside and falls out onto the ground. She dismounts to collect it, and Peter takes her stallion's reins. When she turns the letter over, it reveals the blue and black wax of Roland, of her sister, Mirabella. Catherine reads it and starts to scream.
"Cat!" Peter quickly dismounts. "Cat, what is it?"
She crumples the letter from Roland in her fist. It was not addressed to her. It was not addressed to anyone. It was a notice, found tacked to the gates of the Volroy. Peter takes her by the shoulders, but she breaks free, screaming so loud she spooks the horses and her new stallion bolts for the safety of the stables. Nicholas struggles to keep his mare still, his expression confused.
"Catherine?"
she hears Natalia calling, running to her across the courtyard.
"Cat, are you all right?"
"How many of these are there?"
Catherine shouts. She stalks toward Natalia and Genevieve and holds up the crumpled paper in her fist.
"How many? You must have known. When were you going to tell me?"
"Tell you what?" Genevieve squeaks, as Natalia pries the letter from Catherine's fingers and reads.
"It is a challenge," Natalia says.
"Mirabella has challenged Catherine to a duel, to be held at the great arena in Indrid Down."
"What?"
Peter asks.
"When?"
"At the next full moon." Genevieve moans. "That is less than 2 weeks away." Natalia grabs for the accompanying letter from the council.
"It says that they are everywhere," Catherine says. "Tacked to every board and signpost in Indrid Down."
"How did she manage it?" Genevieve asks shrilly. "It must have taken a small army to pull off such a stunt."
"Then she must have used a small army," Natalia replies.
Catherine grits her teeth. She recites the challenge from memory in a bitter voice.
"A duel, to be held the day of July's full moon in the arena in our great capital of Indrid Down. All are welcome to bear witness to the end of the ascension and the beginning of a new elemental reign."
Catherine grabs at her hair and shrieks, tearing it loose of its bun.
"Who has seen these?"
"There is no way to know," says Natalia. "But if it were me, I would dispatch riders to every corner. I would make sure that the entire island hears of the challenge."
"Must everyone be here to witness this?" Genevieve hisses.
She throws her hand up at Peter's mare, who has fled only a few paces away.
"Even the horses? Shall I call the kitchen staff and the maids?"
"This is not the way."
Katarine begins to pace, biting at her nails and muttering to herself. It is not what we planned, not what we hoped. We would see her disgraced in her own city. She spins angrily and points to the letter. All are welcome to bear witness? Bear? Is that some slight against me and the way I dispatched Arsinoe?
If it is, I do not see how.
Katarine takes a deep breath. She smooths her mussed hair.
Mirabella will not get away with this. The supreme brat will live only long enough to regret ever coming to the capital.
Cat, Peter says gently, a triumph is still a triumph, whether in Rolanth or Indrid Down. This will be even more gratifying in many ways, as it will be before all of those in the city who have watched you grow from a child. Mirabella's boldness will only make it easier and sweeter when she loses.
Katarine pauses. Then she exhales and the shoulders of everyone around her relax slightly.
Perhaps you are right.
Either way, she will be dead. Here we can arrange things the way we like, and I will not have to disturb the bear by making him travel. She grabs the notice from Natalia and tears it down the center, smiling sweetly as the halves float to the gravel drive.
I will hold a ball the night before to welcome her.
Yes, says Natalia. That is a fine idea.
Katarine nods and blinks at them. They look terrified.
Natalia, I am so sorry. I did not mean to carry on so.
It is all right, Kat, though you must control your temper. What has come over you? You are behaving like an elemental.
Katarine lowers her head. She curtsies to Natalia and walks alone toward the house. But it is not long before Peter catches up to her.
A duel, he says. Katarine, what will we do?
I cannot believe that the temple would allow it. The risk is too great, on both sides.
She thinks she can win, Katarine says as they enter the manor, cool darkness enveloping them and making her skin prickle. That the goddess is on her side.
She reaches for belladonna berries piled high in a gold bowl on a foyer table and stuffs a handful into her mouth.
She may win, Peter cautions. In the open space of the arena, she will have the advantage.
She will have no advantage.
Katarine, that is plenty of berries.
He takes her arm, but she wrenches away and eats still more. The juice is running down her chin.
Cat, you will sicken.
Katarine laughs.
And what if Mirabella is right? Peter asks. What if the goddess is on her side?
Katarine turns on him, grinning with teeth full of poison. And for a moment, her vision blacks out and makes his face a void, dark and bottomless as the pit of the Breccia Domain.
It does not matter. They are on mine.
Rolanth. The notice that Bree prepared in swirling black ink, challenging Katarine to a duel in the Indrid Down arena, is absolutely perfect. It bears Mirabella's signature, recreated at the printer's, but she made sure to send the original to tack to the Volroy gates.
They are everywhere? Mirabella asks.
Everywhere, Bree replies. From here to Bastion City, and even northwest to Sunpool.
And to Wolf Spring.
Of course. Good, Mirabella says. I would have Arsinoe's family there to see the poisoner fall. She chuckles slightly.
You are jovial?
Only when I imagine Katarine's face when she reads this, Mirabella says. But her smile does not last. It is easy to think of killing Katarine when she is angry. But when the anger fades,
she must not let the anger fade.
Beside them, Elizabeth worries at the stump of her left wrist.
Are you all right, Elizabeth? Mirabella asks.
Does it still pain you?
Not often, Elizabeth replies.
She looks down at the skin, pulled taut over the nub of bone.
The scars from the stitches have faded to a deep pink. I'm only wondering about the tattooed bracelet. It will feel strange to adorn an eyesore such as this. Elizabeth turns her wrists over, toying with her one bracelet of ribbon and beads. Soon they will perform the ritual and ink the black bands into her skin, and she will be a full priestess, belonging to the temple, forever.
"Your arm is not ugly, Elizabeth," Bree says hotly. "It was an ugly thing that was done to you."
"When do they want to hold the ceremony?" Mirabella asks. "As soon as I will consent. It's past time. I've been an initiate for almost 3 years."
"And will you do it?" asks Bree. "You should not. You should throw off those robes and stay with us. You will always be welcome at Westwood House."
Bree's voice is forceful, determined. She does not understand why Elizabeth stays after what they did to her. Bree is not suited to serve like Elizabeth is.
"I haven't decided," Elizabeth says. "I wouldn't mind staying an initiate for a little while longer. Perhaps a few years. Perhaps forever. Then I could keep Pepper and still have the choice to stay or go."
Mirabella looks ahead to their white-robed escort. They have drifted quite a distance away, but she is sure they are still listening. She squeezes Elizabeth's elbow.
"You will tell us? So we can be there."
Elizabeth nods and Mirabella kisses both her friends on the cheeks before parting company to go and see Luca. She finds the High Priestess in her rooms high in the temple, soaking up a spilled cup of tea with one of her silk pillows.
"Perhaps a towel?" Mirabella suggests,
and Luca startles.
"Mira, you frightened me."
She holds up the soiled pillow and makes a regretful face, then drops it beside her desk, ruined.
"You have just missed Roe."
"Oh?" Mirabella raises her brows, unable to feign disappointment.
"Are the two of you hatching plans again?"
"I do not know what you mean."
"Of course you do. I have heard the whispers about Beltane. Your idea to sacrifice my sisters into the fires and make me a white-handed queen?"
She pauses to watch Luca try to maintain a passive expression.
"Your priestesses forget I have ears. They grow careless when they speak. But with all of your scheming, I cannot believe that you disapprove of the duel."
"Whether or not I disapprove does not matter. You announced it before the city.
You think we should let her come to Roland?
At least we would have the advantage of having her attack be here, at home, where she would feel unfamiliar and off balance."
"Yes," says Mirabella. "And how did that work for Arsinoe? Coming here is what Catarine wants. She wants me cut down in Roland, humiliated in front of my people. I was never her target in the Wolf Spring Woods. It was always Arsinoe. It was always going to be Arsinoe."
Luca studies her quietly from beneath her white hood.
"Perhaps we have missed our chance," Luca says. "Once, you were the chosen queen. Now all is uncertain. Now our fortunes have reversed."
"A duel in the arena favors me," Mirabella presses. "Elemental queens have fared well before."
Luca turns back to her spilled tea and pours again in the remains of the first cup.
When she drinks, it drips onto her robes.
"I feel the goddess's hand in this, Luca. You must trust in me."
"Her hand, perhaps," the High Priestess says softly.
"But the goddess is not always kind, Mira. We cannot know her will. Even in those moments when I have felt most close to her, that I thought I saw a hint of her plans,"
she gestures with a trembling hand.
"One moment it is clear, and the next it is gone."
"Then how do we know we are doing the right thing?"
"We do not. We do our best, knowing that there is no choice, and that she will have her way in the end."
The Black Cottage.
Willa walks past Arsinoe on the way to the kitchen.
Goose and onion pie tonight?
Willa holds up a small yellow onion and chucks Arsinoe beneath the chin with it. Arsinoe replies uncertainly.
Was that one of my favorites? You do not remember?
I don't. Arsinoe follows her through the sitting room, looking at the paintings and the furniture. It would not have changed much, but nothing feels familiar. Mirabella remembers everything. If she were here, the sentimental goof would be hugging that chair.
Even when she was a girl, Mirabella had far too much dignity to go about hugging chairs. Unlike you. How are you healing?
Arsinoe follows her into the kitchen and rolls her shoulder. The wound from the crossbow bolt has closed. Before long, it will be no more than a fresh, deep scar. She can feel the new dead spot forming in her back, like the dead spots in her face. Another wound, another ruin.
I'm all right? Good. Then you can leave.
Willa takes down a bowl filled with dough she prepared that morning, and Arsinoe snorts.
Were you always this affectionate? Or did you put us on swaddle boards and hang us off doors?
Willa scoffs.
We have not swaddled queens in 7 ages.
Then she pauses in her kneading and fixes Arsinoe with a sharp eye.
It isn't that I want you to go. I never imagined I would see you again, after the day they took you. But if the Black Council finds you here, they will have my old neck and Kara's as well.
Not for long, Arsinoe says. Once Mirabella is crowned and replaces the Aarons on the council with Westwoods, everything will change. They might even let Kara go.
Perhaps.
Willa presses her lips together, but cannot quite hide her smile. Arsinoe cocks her head.
Is that what you want to happen? Why you did it? Why you switched us as babies?
The old woman slaps the dough onto the counter and shakes flour down over it.
What makes you think I was the one who switched you?
Who else?
Who else was here?
Willa asks.
The queen, your mother. I was only the midwife, and the midwife does as she is told. But why would she? Do you wish she had not?
Willa looks at Arsinoe sharply.
And in any case, she did not say. I gather that the Aarons were not kind, and during her rule I do not think she liked what she saw within the Poisoner Council. Besides, in Mirabella she saw the queen to come, and the queen always knows what she has. So there was little harm in sabotaging the other two.
Sabotaging the other two? Arsinoe repeats, and her lips twist wryly.
Queen Camille was a sweet girl, but the only one who ever loved her was her king consort. She was glad to leave. She was glad to have done with her duty.
Huh, Arsinoe says. It should sting, hearing that. But it doesn't.
It does not, because you are a queen. You are not like other mothers or daughters. You are not like other people.
Arsinoe takes up a knife and begins slicing onions. Seeing Willa work the dough has started to make her hungry.
Did she go, then? Arsinoe asks.
With her king consort, to live happily off the island?
How should I know? Perhaps. It is what she wanted. Though they say that the weak ones do not live long after their triplets are born. A queen's life is glorious and short, whether she rules or dies in her ascension year. This is the way things are. Being put out by it will not change it.
The weak ones, Arsinoe says and stabs a mushroom. But Mirabella will be a queen who rules into her 50th year. She'll have her triplets and leave and die somewhere grand. An old woman.
Don't crush me between your buttocks, Kara says gruffly,
and slaps the rump of one of the chestnut saddle horses that Joseph and Madrigal rode in on. He and the other horse have had to share a stall in the